call a meeting to order. We have received the technical advice along the lines of, well, start and hope for the best. They wouldn't allow us to go to any other room, so they must have got our reputation about what we do in rooms. But approval of the minutes is the first item. We've got the minutes of the February 13th meeting. There's a technical correction on the other, February 6th, February 8th, were noted as being the 6th and 7th meeting. They are actually the 5th and 6th meeting. Representative Ann Delk moves those minutes and technical corrections. Is there further discussion, concerns? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. The first bill that we have up today is House File 131, Representative Hillstrom's bill. Before we get to that bill, Chair Dabney, who is on his way back and will be momentarily, but we'll take up the testimony. This is a division report, so when Representative Dabney, who was just away for a moment, we'll move the adoption of that division report. In the meantime, why don't we take the testimony on the bill. Representative Hillstrom, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Are we on? Okay. Apparently we are on. House File 131 was a bill brought to me by the Attorney General's office. It was first introduced 2 years ago, and we have made a tremendous amount of progress. We had one amendment between the first time I introduced it in the first committee, and now we have met with stakeholders now on three occasions, and we think we have most of the controversy worked out. So you will find an amendment 59 in your packet that we hope that you will adopt, and then we have a few verbal amendments as well, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and we've been joined by Chair Dabney from the Commission or the Division on Consumer Protection and Labor. Chair Dabney moves the division report. Is there discussion of the division report? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
That motion carries. Chair Dabney, are you comfortable moving the bill before the full committee, House File 131?
So moved, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. With that, we have the 807-0059 would be the author's amendment to shape it up into the form that you'd like to have it, Representative Hillstrom?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And Chair Dabney, you're comfortable moving that amendment as well?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there discussion with regard to the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also have a few verbal amendments, if we could take care of that right away. These are items that, since the last meeting, we have come to some additional agreements, which I think makes at least a little more peace in the valley.
We like peace in the valley, Representative Hillstrom. Can you walk us through slowly
certainly,
the
Mr.
oral amendments?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Page 1, line 1.17, there's currently the word essential on that line, and we're deleting essential and replacing it with the word necessary. The second piece is deleting, at the end of that sentence, deleting the comma or the semicolon and the word and then deleting line 1.18 and 1.19. And then on the language that you just amended on, line 1.17 from the amendment, we're adding the word after 8. We're adding the word a sell, comma, then the remaining language stays, lease, loan, trade, rent, or otherwise intentionally disclosed. And then one other.
Can you do that, Mr. Chair?
Representative Hillstrom, will you repeat the last oral amendment? That would be the one on line 1.17.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, on line 1.17 of the amendment, we're adding the word sell, comma, before the word lease.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
And then, back on the bill, in its original form, line 2.12, we're deleting item number 7, which currently says sell social security numbers to obtain from individuals in the course of business, because we've combined that with number 8. And then, of course, you'll need to renumber. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
No, that's fine, Representative Hilstrom. And that concludes the oral amendments?
That concludes the oral amendments.
Are members clear with regard to what those proposed oral amendments are? Chair Dabney, are you comfortable moving those oral amendments on behalf of Representative Hilstrom?
So moved, Chair Ecken.
Thank you. Is there further discussion or comments? And that will finally shape up the bill in the order in which you desire to proceed?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Unless there's further discussion or questions, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With me, I have the Attorney General's Office, again, where the bill originated, and I would like to turn it over to him if possible.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Ireland. I'm an Assistant Attorney General in the Consumer Enforcement Division of the Attorney General's Office. Worked in the Consumer Enforcement Division, although I look like I'm about 13 years old. Worked in the Attorney General's Office since 1999. So you can call me Doogie Howser, J.D. What we have is we've distributed a fact sheet on identity theft, the Social Security numbers, to members of the committee. That provides background information related to identity theft. I think it's an issue that's been taken up, has really risen to prominence in the last 3-4 years, and there have been a number of identity theft proposals that have been passed by the legislature in the past few years. This bill amends Statute 325E.59, and what it does is first it repeals a loophole, and the Attorney General's Office believes that it's a very large loophole, and it allows for any business that is violating the provisions of 325E59 to continue doing so, provided that they start July 1, 2007, provided that they start before July of this year. And this raises a number of concerns. The biggest is an enforcement issue of creating an unlevel playing field, really, where you have certain businesses that are violating the act and then other businesses that can continue to do conduct that raised enough concern that this statute was passed to begin with, but they're allowed to continue. So it repeals that loophole. The second is subpart 8, which is now subpart 7. And that relates to the sell, lease, loan, trade, rent, or otherwise disclosed. It's an important subpart, and it's now the language is consistent with North Carolina and Vermont Social Security number bill. And what it does is it provides a duty on companies that are handling Social Security numbers to not really turn a blind eye as to where that information is ending up and to make sure that they're using it for legitimate business purposes. We also added subpart 9, which is now subpart 8, which relates to refusing to do business with an individual who does not disclose to that company or business their Social Security number. And there are a number of exceptions that are written into the law and into the bill that would allow it in certain circumstances that I think recognizes the widespread use of Social Security numbers and for legitimate purposes, such as obtaining credit and for obtaining health benefits. And then finally, we add the language to requiring a Social Security number over the Internet and add the additional requirement that it be necessary to the transaction. That really cuts to the whole purpose or the core of this bill, which is to eliminate or limit the situations in which businesses are collecting Social Security numbers as a matter of convenience as opposed to something that's necessary for that transaction. And then finally, subpart 5 relates to using or sending Social Security numbers over the mail or through the mail.
Thank you, Mr. Ireland. Representative Hilstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this point, we would stand for questions unless you need more clarification on the bill.
Okay. Thank you both. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Chairman Atkins.
Hilson, could you explain to me on your amendment, it's line 1.19, and it says here, when the party making the disclosure knows, or in the exercise of reasonable diligence would have reason to believe. Could you explain what that all means? Because that looks like you just gutted your bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to defer to the Attorney General's office.
That would be good. Tell me why the Attorney General would agree to gut the Social Security bill.
Mr. Ireland.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are a couple reasons why we support this language. One is it creates an affirmative duty on the company that's handling the Social Security numbers to create and have reasonable diligence as to where that Social Security number is going. That's something that is not in current law, and it also recognizes that there are...
Stop. Explain to me how... Thank you, Chairman. How does a company know, or how do you prosecute? That's so weak. Any company could say, I looked in the mailbox and there wasn't anything in there, and that's reasonable diligence. How do you bring charges against somebody?
Mr. Ireland.
Mr. Chair. Representative, I think a good example is a case that I actually worked on, where you have a multi-state investigation of a company that is selling information to another person who's headquartered out of country in the Cayman Islands and has a history of felonies and a history of identity theft abuse. And so this provision would provide our hook, our legislative hook, our enforcement hook, to not allow the company that sold that information to the third party or the other business that's located overseas, and it allows us to go after them, again, for failing to investigate who that business is, where it's going, have those standards, make sure that information is going to be used properly. And I think it also recognizes that there are situations in which Social Security numbers are part of larger transactions, and we want to eliminate unintended consequences. And so by being consistent with North Carolina and Vermont, we allow there to be uniformity in the law. And if down the road in a few years it looks like that this does, in fact, gut this bill, I think the Attorney General's office would be the first one there to amend it and make it stronger.
Mr. Ireland, has it, in fact, been effective in North Carolina and Vermont and wherever else you've based it upon?
It was passed in 2005, and so I think it's early to see.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Members of the committee, Attorney General's office, Representative Hilstrom, you just created a large semi-hole in your bill. I won't ask any more questions, but... I have a real hard time supporting a bill that you just put a supersized hole in. I mean, I don't understand how you're going to get anyone to say, to prove reasonable diligence. I mean, reasonable diligence is when my kids used to tell me, Dad, I'm going to make a reasonable effort to be home by midnight. And I had the choice of either saying, oh, that's great, or, no, be home by midnight. You just made make a reasonable effort to be home by midnight.
Actually, if I might, Mr. Pender, my understanding is that, I know you want to get involved in this, but on that language, the knower, I kind of put this in the category of knew or should have known, in terms of the exercise reasonable diligence. There is, that's a term of art that is used to set the standard of care that, I guess in this case, it would be the owner of the Social Security number or the keeper of the Social Security number. Is there a description or a a definition that you would give to, I mean, it's clear what it means that they knew that they were giving it to an illegitimate party, but how about with regard to the exercise of reasonable diligence?
Mr. Chair, I think that's something that's hard to define except in the context. You look at the situation and see what a reasonable person would do in a particular situation using due diligence to investigate or analyze the situation. And it would sort of depend on what kind of evidence the person had or what information the person had about the situation. I don't know what more to say.
Actually, well, I knew the answer to it too. I'm sure Representative Mullery does. The definition of the term of art that allows for that you would do what a normal person would do under similar circumstances. So if a normal person would look into it and figure out if they're legitimate or not, that's the standard to which they'd be held. It's a fairly reasonable standard to apply. But if you want to read it a different way, you've certainly got every right to do that. But
yeah, and I would have thought that Mr. Pender just backed up my argument, but, you know, there's always an amendment on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Maloney. Representative Simpson, did you have a question or comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Instead of asking Representative Hillstrom, I think I'll just go to our witness. And I kind of find it interesting that we have a law that goes into effect July 1st of 2007. And being just a simple grocer and not a lawyer, I don't understand how you're reading into this. But you just stated that the North Carolina and the Vermont laws went into effect in 2005, and you aren't seeing the results of those yet. But now we're changing a law that we haven't even got on the books yet. So I kind of wonder what makes this such a critical thing to do today. And then I guess I would ask another question would be, we're limiting businesses that are collecting Social Security numbers for convenience. Is this really happening, or is this perceived being done?
Mr. Ireland, Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I will start. One of the biggest reasons we're bringing it forward now is we are amending the law to not allow businesses who start breaking the law that's going to start happening as of July 1st of this year.
To that point,
Representative Simpson.
Thank you. Do we have businesses breaking the law? Do we know that this is happening? And do we have fact that it's happening? Or is this just facsimile?
I'm sorry, Representative Hillstrom.
Okay, Mr. Chair, let me first finish commenting. We want to make certain that the people that we're doing businesses by using Social Security numbers are all impacted by the law that's going to come into effect. That's the first thing. And so then I will turn to the Attorney General's office to talk about what has, in fact, been happening. But one of the reasons why I became very involved and very interested in this bill is I had some surgery in August. And when I went in, my wristband had my name, my date of birth, and my Social Security number on my wristband in the hospital bedroom. So every single person that walked into the room, including the guy that changed the sheets, got to look at my wristband with my Social Security number on. And that's a problem. I currently bank with Wells Fargo, and I go online, and I check my bank account. I have to go on with my Social Security number. Since I started in these meetings, I've been told you can change that number. But I've been banking there for years and banking online, and for years I've been entering my Social Security number. This is an attempt to have less Social Security numbers out there. So in general, attempting to protect people and their privacy. We're saying that if the transaction does not require the Social Security number, you ought not be using it. I'm sure many of you have gone to the local store and they ask you for your telephone number, even when you're going to pay cash, so that they can track who is doing business where. We want to make sure that that's not happening with the Social Security number. And so with that, I will also allow the AG's office to answer.
Starling.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I concur with Representative Hillstrom. It is an issue out there, and that's what this bill does, is it tries to go upstream and stop identity theft. There are going to be identity thieves, and they're always going to be bad people. But if we go upstream and we limit the amount of Social Security numbers that are just floating around out there that are being collected because it's easy or convenient and not necessarily being collected because it's necessary for the transaction or it's required by state or federal law, Those are the situations that this bill gets in. And I think a few years ago, all of our health insurance cards that we carried around had our Social Security number, and now they're shifting away from that. But that's an issue. If someone drops their wallet someplace and their membership card or their union card or whatever it is has their Social Security number in it, it's going to make it more prone for identity theft.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Representative Simpson, are you done?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up. And with the changes in, like I said, the North Carolina and the Vermont law, you indicated that they aren't seeing any results of that yet. So how are we basing that this is good law or a good policy to do when they have no results from those states yet?
Mr. Allen?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not aware of the results from North Carolina or Vermont. I'm not saying that they haven't had any results. I'm just not aware of any cases, and I certainly could go back to the office and call my colleagues in North Carolina and Vermont and find out specifically what causes of action or actions that their state attorneys general have taken under that law to find out. I'm just not aware of them. As for the language, again, it gets into compliance and conformity and making sure that we have some uniform laws.
Thank you, Mr. Ireland. I think it was Representative De La Forest, Ben Mullery, Sellers, and Paulson. Representative De La Forest.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I had a question for the author, just a brief one. Looking at the House file, it says in line 1.7 that this doesn't include government, and obviously many of the provisions of this bill wouldn't apply to government, but given the changes around here in the last session, I'm curious, what do we do to state government here in Minnesota and local jurisdictions regarding the handling of Social Security numbers? And perhaps just a couple examples, do we force cities, for example, to use a secure encrypted connection if a person sends their Social Security number to a local governmental entity? Or are there instances do we allow government to refuse to do business with a citizen if the citizen refuses to give up their Social Security number?
Representative Hellstrom. I'm going to defer to the Attorney General's office here, but the one thing that I do want to comment is the Social Security number was invented to be used for government, you know, first for Social Security number and Social Security services. And so that's one of the reasons why government has been held differently to a different standard than business has. Now, I do recognize that there has been a lot of theft or loss recently regarding government. And I personally may look into that. But, you know, at this point, I was working with the Attorney General's office for the last 2 years regarding business and the use of Social Security numbers. And so I really haven't ventured into the government area. We've had more than 35 lobbyists in a room all talking about the language that's in here. I can imagine the size of the room if I added government to the mix. So with that, if you'd like to make a comment.
Mr. Allen.
Mr. Chair. Representative, the Social Security Act, the federal statute, was amended in 1974 and set forth a variety of provisions related to restrictions on when state and local governments can require Social Security numbers to be provided, and specifically stated that unless it's for a series of exceptions, which I won't bore you with, but if you didn't do it prior to 1974 related to Medicare, Medicaid, and law enforcement, then they weren't going to allow any further expansion of this as a universal identifier in government. Because in 1974, that was when the Social Security number was being used, again, to administer the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security programs, and then also for specific law enforcement background check instances. As for the Minnesota state law, I'm not aware of any encryption statute may be out there, but I do know that Social Security numbers are specifically covered in the Minnesota Data Practices Act as confidential private information.
To this point, Representative Abbey.
Thank you, Chair Atkins. Representative De La Forest, in 2005, I worked closely with Representative Jeff Johnson to pass security breach language, or a related set of issues. Then at my initiative, with the assistance of Representative Holberg, We got an amendment added to the data practices bill applying the same requirements of notice on the state government that we just placed on the private sector. So you'll recall last summer in the news media, the former state auditor had several problems in her department, a loss and theft of private information on individuals. The U.S. Postal Service lost 50,000 taxpayers, or misplaced, let's be fair, misplaced 50,000 taxpayers' tax returns for a period of time. The Department of Revenue came forward and divulged that because of that requirement in state law that does apply to the public sector, to the state, as it does to the private sector.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Any follow-up, Representative LaForce?
No, Mr. Chair, just in the interest of time, I won't follow. But don't forget the Department of Veterans Affairs, which lost my identifying data along with a few other veterans. But I just bring it up, Representative Hilstrom, you talk about personal experience. I wanted to sign my son up for skating lessons online, and because I wouldn't provide some of the data that they were asking for to include a Social Security number, I was told you will not sign up online for your son to have skating lessons, so I mailed a check.
Thank you, Representative LaForest. Representative Mulley.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, as you and others know who have been involved in litigation, burden of proof is something, and Mr. Ireland, is it Ireland?
Yes. Pardon me?
And to recognize Representative Mahoney's concern, and also to maybe allay a long discussion on the floor, it would seem to me that 1.19 to 1.21 could be changed and would make sense to change. Just two words, take out when and put in unless, and take out lacks and put in has. You would change the burden of proof then, which would make it easier on the government to actually show something there, which would seem to me to make a lot of sense, and yet would allow the company the out if they could show that that was the case. So,
Representative Mahler, if I might interrupt, can you repeat that suggestion?
You could, on 1.19, if you put in the word unless instead of the word when, and on line 1.20, if you put in has instead of the word lacks, I would think that that would then shift the burden of proof and yet would allow the company an out if they had a legitimate reason, but it would also help. And I understand Representative Mahoney's concern, because I also have that concern. And I think this would be a little more neutral on that issue.
Thank you, Representative Mulley. Mr. Ireland. Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We would not have a problem with that. What you have to understand is that we have been negotiating over a long period of time with 35 stakeholders or more, and I have no idea if that's going to cause all of them to run up to the table to testify. So we came with a stronger bill, and this has been, a work in progress through time. And so we're also hearing now some concerns that some people would like to have 7 back in as well, Mr. Chair. So the longer we go and the more we tweak with this, the more amendments we're going to be hearing.
Thank you, Representative Hilstrom. Representative Mulery, I don't want to stop here, but I think it's good food for thought to have that before us, unless you intend to make it a motion at this point. I'm not.
At this point, I probably won't make it a motion, but I think that Representative Mahoney has a legitimate concern, and this language would then protect the concerns of legitimate businesses also. So I think that if they come up and testify, I think there's a question of what they really have as an intent to do if they can't go along with that.
Thank you, Representative Mulery. If we might, I know that we've got Representatives Zellers, Paulson, and Mahoney on the list. Gentlemen, if you're comfortable, we can certainly take additional questions, and I'll do them now if you want to. But I know that there's a few people that would like to testify as well.
Yeah.
Is that all right? Why don't we ask for anybody that's interested in testifying with respect to the bill? Mr. Neumeister, your maiden voyage before the Commerce Committee this year.
Yes.
Assume it won't
be any testimony.
Now you gotta like that. A guy that brings his own
Well, I've been on a lot of committees outside of here. And I just recently got this, and it was in my briefcase. Long way from paper bags, so.
Welcome to the committee. You know the process.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Richard Neumeister. And for those people that are new to the legislative process, for almost nearly 30 years, I've been lobbying before bodies such as this on issues of privacy, civil liberties, consumer issues. So, and if you ask some of the highly paid folks there and some of your legislators who have been here a long time, they'll tell you I've been around, and I do come with information, I come with opinion, but someone who's well-informed and does their homework. So with that, I want to be able to testify on this bill based on three observations that I make of the bill as I see it today. One, the bill, I think, damages individual privacy interests. Number two, it proliferates identity theft. And three, it limits the consumer choice to protect his or her own privacy. And I will tell you about that and reasons why. First of all, the handout that I gave to you is something from the Department of Administration that highlights the 1974 Privacy Act, which is talked about. And then secondly, what is also handed out to you is part of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which talks about what is permissible purposes. And that's something that I will talk to as I now begin my specific comments about the bill. And with that in mind, on page 1, line 17, I did have a question of what essential meant. It's now necessary. I still got to think about that a little bit. But when we're talking about the Internet, I think it is important to have some type of notice provision that says, you, company, you know, want my Social Security number, why don't you tell me why? Is it supported by law? And for what other kinds of reasons or what options I have? Now, there are some states that are starting to take a look at, because they are aware that there are people that just don't want to give their Social Security numbers. And one of the things that is very important is if you explain to people, and particularly with the Internet, I think it's important to do that. What is lacking here is some type of notice provision. Some states are beginning in a proposal that Illinois is doing or has suggested some type of notice, and that's something I'd like to work on as this bill progresses. On 118, where it says the Social Security number is authorized, required, or authorized by state or federal law. This is where now you should take this item here that I gave to you. What you should know when a government entity wants to collect your Social Security number. Government on any level cannot ask for your Social Security number unless it's related to motor vehicles, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and of course we're all familiar with the child support one that a lot of hunters and folks recognized a couple of years ago. And there might be one or two thrown in there. But if the state likes, like for example, students, they're asking for their Social Security numbers for students, or maybe they want to ask you for your Social Security number like Mr. Chairman, if Mr. De La Forest is talking about, I don't know if that was a public entity or not. But under the law, they're going to have to tell me, is it mandatory or voluntary? The statutory or other authority that they have, and what uses will be made of it. One of the things that I think that is important is that we're defining Social Security numbers can only be asked by federal law. And then you have, as you look at that language where it says Social Security number is otherwise required or authorized by state or federal law, give a diversion. In other words, the state can say, you need to collect Social Security numbers. Now, some states, and Illinois introduced the bill, and I looked at language, it sort of says you have to basically have statutory you have to say what is the statutory authority on the federal level that says you can have the state collect Social Security numbers. Bottom line, it should be very clear that the state cannot say we need your Social Security number unless it's rooted in the federal law. And this language, either get that on the record that that is the case, or change the language, because I contend that's very ambiguous. Now, someone used the word of an amendment. Does this cut your bill, Representative Hillstrom, Attorney General? Well, I'm going to share something like that with the following provisions that I'm talking about. This is on page 2, lines 17 through 28. That, in a way, does gut, at least from my point of view, privacy interests, the ability to let me have choice, and proliferates identity theft. Now, the major point of number 9 is that I can refuse to get my Social Security number unless in state law these following things. Now, it says, Roman numeral 1, the person has a permissible purpose to obtain the individual's credit report. Now, take a look at this three-page item of section 1681B where it says permissible purposes of consumer reports. It's a very broad reason why people can ask for your Social Security numbers. One of the things that will be happening is a business, maybe a sports club, a phone service, an electric company. I mean, I could go on and on. People are doing a private entity that wants your skating thing. I don't know, a public entity. I was denied health insurance if I did not give my Social Security number a year ago. Of course, I needed it. I gave it to them. But I wrote a big letter of reasons why. So if you look at some of the things, it says in accordance, it's for employment purposes, use of information in connection with a credit transaction. You can continue on where it talks about a legitimate business need for the information in connection with a business transaction. That's very broad. Just that makes a big hole in it. Number 2, what I talked about before in terms of what is the difference between state or federal law. That same issue is there. I think that needs to be cleaned up, either to say it's in conjunction with the federal authority. Number 3, I have no problem with. The business has a reasonable basis. Roman numeral 4. The business transaction cannot otherwise be completed without the person's Social Security number. So here's a business saying, Mr. Neumeister, unless you give me your Social Security number, I'm not going to give you this service, this business, whatever it may be. That's pretty broad. It's not giving me choice. Now, one of the things that this also does not have, which some states, Rhode Island and Virginia, according to the Privacy Journal, and I haven't had time to dig into the statutes yet, have said that no law says that private organizations can't ask for it, with a couple of exceptions in Rhode Island and Virginia. Illinois recently proposed legislation in some circumstances that if you're going to ask a business or that private entity, you've got to give me notice. You've got to give me why. You're going to have to tell me why you need it, what you're going to use it for, or whatever. And also puts a little proviso on it that you cannot use it for any type of ID purposes. So, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I've highlighted some items that I think that are important as this bill progresses to address. And I have information. I shared some of the concerns with Mr. Ireland. At this point, they may still be discombobulating some of the points that I made. But be aware of the following. The Social Security number as an identifier is the most powerful and can be most damaging to to privacy if used in the wrong way. Loss of control, which I want to be able to have, and which I think this bill, in a large area of our in our community, I will lose, leads to loss of privacy and could cause direct and substantial financial harm. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, those are my points. I am open to any questions that there may be.
Mr. Neumeister, thank you very much for your comments. Are there questions or concerns at this point for Mr. Neumeister? Thank you again.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else with a placard that desires to be heard? That is really cool. I got to get one of those that says my title and stuff on it. That's Mr. Hesse and Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. First, let me say we appreciate all the work that's been done on this bill with Representative Hillstrom and the Attorney General's office. I think the changes that have been made to date address most and hopefully all of the concerns that the business community has raised with the author. And I say hopefully because some of our folks have not had a chance to fully review some of the last-minute changes here, and we'll just continue to work with the author and give feedback as we get those comments back. So I just want to make a few brief comments about how the business community uses Social Security numbers, and they do so in a responsible and legitimate or for legitimate business purposes. And the industries that are represented here in the room today have transactions that require the use of Social Security numbers for a variety of things, whether it's insurance products that Mr. Johnson could talk about or bank loans or other credit devices, transfers of funds, etc. There are countless ways in which Social Security numbers are used for legitimate commerce. We probably wouldn't be here today debating this legislation if it were not for the Social Security number being the only unique identifier that the United States has. If there were some other identifier that could be used, my guess is this legislation would not be needed. But since the Social Security number is the only unique identifier, it really does have to be used for many critical business transactions. And that's why we've been working with the author to make sure that the legislation that passes will not inhibit commerce. Just one more comment as some background. The legislation that passed in 2005 and 2006 and will take effect in July 1st, 2007 is reportedly one of the toughest laws in the nation and at least on par, if not stronger, than some of the laws that have been talked about already today. So we do have some strong laws on the books that will take effect later this year. And we just want to make sure that as this legislation is crafted, we take into consideration that doing the wrong thing really could interfere with some business transactions that consumers depend on every day. With that, I'll stand for questions, and again, just reiterate that we will continue to work with the author to make sure that this legislation has addressed our concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hesse. Any questions for Mr. Hesse from anybody? Okay. Do you want to go ahead, Mr. Johnson?
Sure. Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. And just a couple of maybe overview comments, yep. Mr. Chairman. I think from as Mr. Hesse indicated, we have had a vigorous discussion and process with Representative Hillstrom and the Attorney General's office as they have raised and flagged areas and concerns. You want me to...
Mr. Johnson, can you pull it a little closer to you? I don't know. Maybe it's just me with some of this.
All right. Well, it might be me.
Thank you, sorry for interrupting.
No, that's fine. Mr. Chairman and committee members, we have had a vigorous and healthy discussion process with Representative Hillstrom and the Attorney General's office as they have flagged and identified specific areas of concern, and then we've brought together, as Representative Hillstrom indicated, really a broad array of interest within the economy, the A to Z in the economy, because data and its movement and its use and Social Security number is pivotal to, I mean, virtually every industry in the state. And as Mr. Hesse indicated, we're on the cutting edge right now. Most states don't have a state law regarding Social Security. Most states don't. And so, again, it's the changes to the law, adopting standards, affecting, again, a multitude of transactions. It's important to wade through and understand its impact. So we do appreciate, and again, we've been sitting down and continue to work through this as these words have been put together. We have a lot of industries that are coast to coast that are involved with Minnesota, so we circulated the language. We are circulating it, rather, and believe that, as Representative Hillstrom and the Attorney General's office have described, that the right balance on these issues raised has been struck. So we're continuing to look at that, and we'll continue to work with Representative Hillstrom and look for that the right balance. But we need to make certain, again, the transactions that your constituents do on a day-to-day basis, that we don't isolate ourselves, or that we don't uniquely or negatively position. And I think it's been an open, candid discussion about those realities, and it's been good, to have the deliberative process to get us to where we're at. So I don't want to belabor that, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions on the amendments or our thinking as the coalition or industries involved.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Any questions for Mr. Johnson or Mr. Hesse? Seeing none? Okay. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. And is there any other witnesses that would like to come forward and testify on this? Well, welcome. Welcome to the committee, and
thank you,
please state your name for the record.
My name is Robert Tennyson. I'm an attorney with Great Platte Moody in Minneapolis, and I represent Reed Elsevier, which is a publishing company that owns LexisNexis. I just want to address one comment that was raised by Representative Mahoney. The provision in the law is really a requirement by companies to know their customer. There's an analog of that in federal law, under the Gramm-Leach-Bliley. So when a financial institution takes on a customer, you have to know your customer. And that doesn't mean that means you have to take affirmative action, conduct an investigation to make sure that the person you're dealing with is who they say they are. There's a major case outside of Gramm-Leach-Bliley that came up a couple of years ago involving a company called ChoicePoint. They were dealing with a customer they thought was legitimate. But he wasn't, and it caused a breach of security. They settled with the Federal Trade Commission for $10 million. There are teeth in this standard, and it isn't a matter of just saying we're not going to, well, we checked with Joe and he said he was okay. That's not acceptable under this law, I don't think. So I think it is a real standard. There is a precedent for it on the federal level, and I think it is very meaningful, and it has severe consequences, as the ChoicePoint case points out. Any company, and mine particularly, and I shouldn't say just mine particularly, my client is very conscious of who they're dealing with. We only deal business to business, so we don't deal with individuals. But we understand the risks. And the risks are high for any company that's in this business. The consequences are severe in the marketplace and in the regulatory side. So we're not just dealing with state law. We're also dealing with federal law. And you got a standard here that is an issue. An example, and I testified to the subcommittee at some length, when a bank opens an account for a new customer, they have to investigate that customer, do a background check. One of the places they check is with my client. Banks are a customer of my client because they want to be able to identify and make sure that Mr. Mahoney is Mr. Mahoney, not some other Mr. Mahoney, or that he's not John Jones. And it isn't just a Social Security number that's part of that investigation. It's or part of the linkage. But it is a serious standard. It's not it's not a truck that you can drive. You know, it's not a semi driving a loop or through a loophole. It's, I don't think it's that at all. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be answer, happy to answer the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Tennyson. Are there any questions or concerns for Mr. Tennyson? Thanks again.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who desires to be heard? We'll resume. We had a couple questions left, and I appreciate your deference. Representative Zelli, you were next up on the list with questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And some of the questions were actually already answered. My big question for the Attorney General's office or for Representative Hillstrom is, what's this going to do to interstate commerce? Are we going to have a new system for each state, a numbering system per... You know, I agree with a lot of the concerns about the Social Security number being overused or abused. If in Mr. Neumeister's case, would probably say exploited. My concern is, though, in some of these, especially the financial markets, if my employer who contributes to my 401k and is going to switch from one to the other and they're transferring that over, if the one can't talk to the other, can't send over that the Social Security number and the information that goes in there, even though I do like my good friend Christy LaForest, I don't want him getting my 401k money. And if that one identifier is a Social Security number, he'd have to pay double for lessons now since he can't go to the skating. My concern is the interstate commerce part of this. We're going to have 49, 50 different systems, or is the Northwest going to go on one and the Midwest on another? And if you can help me with that concern, I'd be really, really appreciated.
Mr. Ireland.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that the statute that is currently law, as well as the bill, tracks and is consistent with the other states that have passed Social Security number privacy. And as it relates to the internal administration and verification of individuals, there's a subdivision 3. So you don't see it on your on the bill in front of you or on the paper in front of you, because it's actually already in the statute. That provides, it's called coordination with other state or federal laws, and it allows for you to use the Social Security number as it's permitted and allowed under state or federal law, as well as for internal verification and administrative purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Representative Zellers?
Yeah, just one other question, Mr. Chairman, on the 1.1516. For certain legitimate business purposes, how is this the new language going to affect it? That's something that, you know, if it's a legitimate purpose, how wouldn't that be prohibitive now under this new language?
Representative Hillstrom or Scarlin?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the question is, how would you define what a legitimate business is? Is that correct? Or
Representative Zeller?
Correct.
Mr. Ireland?
Again, I think this is, Mr. Chair, Representative, I think this is part of the ongoing discussion related to all the stakeholders, as well as the existing states that have passed this language. And again, it's setting that standard of duty of care to ensure that whoever is purchasing this information is not using it for illegal purposes or identity theft purposes, has a felony for identity theft or other conviction, that you're not sending it out to the Grand Cayman Islands or overseas, and there's no legitimate business purpose for doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Ireland. Representative Zellers?
Thank you. Just one last quick question. Back to Representative Simpson's question. You know, and Representative Hillstrom, I understand that under the new law that was supposed to take effect in July of this year, the example that you cited would no longer be in use. If you were to go to the hospital, if something were to happen, that your Social Security number under the new law would not be printed on your wristband. So my concern is along the same lines as the Representative Simpson. Is there a hard, concrete problem we've identified that we're going to fix, or are we just undoing what we already have set in place to take effect in July?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The one problem with the law that is going to take effect in July is if you were already using it in that other way, you got to continue using it that way forever. So there was no motivator for anybody who was currently doing that practice to change. Because, again, if you were already in the practice of using it, you didn't have to change.
Anything else, Representative?
Yeah, my other question was the other, you said that there's an ongoing problem with this, and that, you know, if there was, back to Representative Simpson's question, I don't think was quite answered, the specifics of how many are we seeing, where are these specific examples that we're looking at?
Mr. Ireland?
Representative, I think that you do see the collection of Social Security numbers in standard forms that are created for administrative purposes down at Office Max for clubs that are collecting and using Social Security numbers because it's easy and is not as a personal identifier, and it's not that you're obtaining credit or using it for financial purposes. They're just using it as an account number because that's the easiest thing to do, and that's what this statute and that's what this bill wants to address, are those situations where it's on your union membership card, your health insurance card, or it's being collected on an application because that just happens to be a blank on a standard form that you purchased down at Office Max, and there really isn't a reason for you to have that information. Going upstream, limiting the number of Social Security numbers that are out there that are not actually being used for the reason that they're intended.
Thank you, Representative Paulson, and then Mahoney are yet on the list. Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hellstrom. I guess I'll just add a couple comments. I'm also concerned about if we don't have any specific examples. I'm just kind of curious of what exactly we're trying to address here, because I know the current law is taking effect in July. It's the toughest law in the nation. We've heard that testimony already, and we're repealing the continuous use provision, which you laid out, again, that the hospital band is already covered under current law. But was it your testimony, Mr. Ireland, that Vermont has eliminated the continuous use provision in their current law?
Mr. Ireland?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are probably about 10 to 20 states that have passed Social Security number privacy bills. The Vermont and North Carolina was just related to the subdivision 8, which is now 7, that was added. Some states do have a continuous use exclusion, but the vast majority of states that have passed Social Security number bills do not have a continuous use exemption. And this bill, the primary goal of it is to join the majority of other states that have eliminated that continuous use exemption.
Well, Representative Paulson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ryan, when I'm reading I have a copy of the Vermont statute, and I mean, they've still got the continuous use provision in their law. In my respect, the language is identical to the bill that Representative Hillstrom is amending. It's identical. And I guess one of my concerns is we're eliminating some consumer protections by that repealer, specifically under subdivision 2, the repealing under current law protection for an individual to have an annual disclosure statement. Number 3 is a written request by an individual to allow the stop of their use of their Social Security number. And there's another, I guess I would view as a consumer protection measure. I'm just curious, why would we be repealing all those consumer protection measures if Vermont didn't do it and if other states aren't doing it? I know they may be considering it, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative, the reason why the notice and the opt-out language is not necessary is if it is repealed, is because it would be that those actions would be prohibited. So if you were using Social Security number, for example, you were printing it on the outside of an envelope, for example, or you were using it as the primary account identification card. Maybe that's a better example. So you're a member of a health club, and you're using, and they have your Social Security number as your primary account identification. Under the continuous use exception, they would be able to continue to use that Social Security number as your primary account, provided that you get notice and the opportunity to opt out. That notice provision and that opportunity to opt out is eliminated because that health club would no longer be able to use your Social Security number on the card. So the notice notice wouldn't be necessary because the actions or the acts would be prohibited at that time.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, Mr. Allen, I mean, that makes sense. I guess I would just advise you, Representative Hillstrom, thank you for working with the stakeholders, first of all, and I'm sure you'll continue to do that through the process, but it would be helpful to have some specific examples. I'm not aware of any health clubs that have a Social Security number. I know we've kind of thrown out some examples, but it would be helpful, I think, especially if this is going to the floor, to have some examples, because you're probably going to get some questions about, you know, why the, you know, where the nexus of the bill idea comes from, so...
Thank you, Representative Paulson. Is Representative Mahoney, you're on the list yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. President Heston, you know, I was allowing you to get your bill into the order that you wanted it to when you did the verbal amendments, and when you eliminated line 2.12, the selling the Social Security number obtained from individuals in the course of business. You know, I don't understand why you're ever allowing that to happen. And the sale of a Social Security number. I don't want my Social Security number. I know my next door neighbors don't like their Social Security number sold. I think that's something that we should take a look at putting back into this bill. The other thing is, on line 2.27, the business transaction cannot otherwise be completed without the person's Social Security number. I got to tell you, the only thing that some clerk at a grocery store is going to have to say is, well, that's what my boss told me, and all of a sudden some poor consumer is going to hand out their Social Security number because somebody said we're not going to sell you groceries or take your application or let you go ice skating lessons unless you give us your Social Security number. I know how hard I've heard how hard you worked on this bill. I understand that there's been a tremendous amount of stakeholders in this bill, but I certainly hope that you give us a respectable out today while you decide to work a little reword this bill before it comes back to this committee. I won't try to put these amendments on here, but the business community has not made its case at all to me that they need my Social Security number. I know my bank does. I know my mortgage banker does and my credit union does. And I know that I will never use those people again if I understand them to sell my Social Security number. And frankly, I wish everybody was as aware of how easily our Social Security number is being sold and how much money business is making off of this. So I won't offer these amendments here, but I will be getting them prepared for some later date. If this person is up again, I am going to try and put Representative Mulvey's amendment in. I'm going to try and put the prohibiting the sale of the Social Security number back in. And then, what was that consumer, the guy with the plaque? I knew what his name was then. But he brought up a good point, and I will be talking to research on that particular one, too. So I hope he's get a chance to fix this bill before it moves much farther.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We like a stronger bill. We started with a much stronger bill, and we were requested and directed to work with the stakeholders to see if we could come to some compromise. If I had my personal choice, 7 would stay. So we're open to discussion. We want a bill that's ultimately going to pass and become law. And so you know, I'm happy to work with you. Mr. Neumeister came to one of the stakeholder meetings, as well as many of the people you see here. We're happy to continue to work on it. So if it is the chair's intention, you know, to lay it over for possible inclusion in a bill, you know, we'd be open to that. If it is intention to, you know, lay it over and bring it up and allow us to have another stakeholders meeting, we're open to that. The ultimate goal is to get a statute that, you know, lays out all of the items that the Attorney General is attempting to address. So, Mr. Chair, I guess we would defer to you and your request. I'm not certain if this bill has another committee to go to or not, and so I guess we would leave it in your hands and take some direction.
Representative Hillstrom, my and it probably bears mentioning at this point, my intention is to lay the bill over for potential inclusion in the omnibus bill. There's been a request by the Public Safety and Civil Justice Committee to hear the bill that we recently became aware of. And my my suggestion, I don't have a problem, frankly, with it traveling both ways. But I think probably, and I should have started by indicating I commend you and the Attorney General's office and all of the folks that are sitting all over and standing all over the room for the extraordinary amount of work that has gone into it to this point. You've done a yeoman job of trying to incorporate the suggestions and make them work within the context of the real world. What I intend to do at this point is lay the bill over for potential inclusion. I'd suggest that we both continue to work to try to figure out language that we could, because it would be my intent to have this bill travel individually as well, if that's a possibility, and in the very least become part of the omnibus data privacy bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that we've been made aware that Representative Mullery would like to see this bill as well, how does that play into the whole laying over for possible inclusion and traveling, just in terms of process? Because we know we're getting very short deadlines here, and we don't want to miss a potential deadline because we laid over to work on it. So how would you like us to proceed here?
At this point, if we're going to move it to public safety, I don't think we're going to do that today. There strikes me that there's still a number. I'm aware that there's amendments on each side of the table, some which may trigger other amendments and so forth. My suggestion would be that we take into account the comments that have been made on each side of the table. I'd still like to process the bill individually. If there's an opportunity to bring the parties together and get that that language that works, and then move it to Representative Chair Mullery's committee. My hope, folks, would be that if we bring it back individually, that it would come back in a fashion that everybody's in somewhat some level of agreement on, that there's some level of peace in the valley, and that we're able to move it relatively rapidly as opposed to spend another full committee, because I think it's gotten a great hearing at this point. From the Attorney General's office, been a lot of good questions and concerns and items raised. If we can get it back and we intend to process it individually, I'd want to do it relatively fast, get it to Chair Mullery's committee so that we can get it moving in light of the short deadlines. But I don't intend to have you hanging for another couple weeks. My hope would be to try to bring it back yet next week, but not without some assurance from the folks around the table that we can process it rapidly and readily. Is that enough guidance for you, Representative Hillstrom?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So we will have another stakeholders meeting, and we will invite any member of the committee who would like to attend. And when you come, all of you, please bring language, because that that is what helped us process it this quickly this week.
And final comment, which is, Representative Hillstrom, you made miles of progress once you had language to work with, and I would engage and encourage, if there's members around the table that have language, like we heard some today, make sure it's in Representative Hillstrom's hands so that it can be thought through with all of the stakeholders in the Attorney General's office and Mr. Neumeister and anybody else who desires to be there. With that, we'll lay that bill over for potential inclusion. There are no other items. We do have a couple meetings next week. I see the lights are going off, so we better adjourn. But thank you all very much. Have a good evening.